Thank you so much for tuning in. We appreciate you, and we're happy that you're here with us. This is the FI Recovery Podcast. This is One Pretty Ricky. I'm joined by my co-hosts, Kirsten Hooven and Adam Martin today. We are going to be covering some all sorts of amazing topics, but specifically we're going to be talking about spiritual tools. But of course, none of this would be possible without some amazing sponsors who help support our podcast. So we want to, of course, shout out our F5 project and the Ridge Recovery and Treatment Center, as well as GoAwayBear.com and this amazing space that we were able to be in, courtesy of Heat Transfer Warehouse and Church from Fargo. So stick around. Feel free, of course, if you like and love what we're doing, feel free to please like and subscribe. We'd love to be able to continue to bring you great content. What's up, y'all?
Zing.
Yeah.
I need one more cup of coffee, I think. Yeah.
We have no coffee right now.
Yeah.
This
might be, is it more century maybe? Or will it be more like toned down because of this coffee? I don't know. Like in recovery, like I drank coffee before.
Only you can go from no coffee to in recovery.
Well, like now, because it was like, I mean, because before coffee was like, I was like, you know, just kill your high. So I was like, I don't want that. Like, I was like, if I'm going to do it, I want to, like, do it all the way. Whereas now it's like, okay, well, I don't have anything. So I was like, I'll drink coffee because it's still kind of like leveling me up.
Yeah. That's called addiction.
Oh.
Yeah, that whole thing you just said there. That's in a textbook, actually, I read.
I just not drink coffee anymore.
Even with coffee, I wanted all of it.
Yeah. Just drink coffee for the effect. Wow, that's addiction.
It is like jet fuel in meetings, though. Like, my parents are avid coffee drinkers. Cannot drink recovery coffee. Can't. It should... we should sell it as recovery coffee.
Yeah, but some places it's like mud.
Yeah.
It's like I'm gonna drink, you know what? I'm gonna attempt
this hurts.
This 16-ounce mud.
Yeah.
And by halfway through it, and then halfway through, because it took half the meeting to get halfway through it.
Yeah.
And they're like, you're like, well, I wonder why they only have one small coffee urn for 100 people.
Oh, because it takes. Shaky.
Yeah. And like early in recovery, you're not like, you know, you don't have a lot of money. You're not eating like three meals a day. Yeah. It's way better to drink like that coffee on like a full stomach or something like that. But man, you're like probably haven't eaten that day.
Yeah.
You're sitting in a meeting. You're a half hour into it, and you got the jitters. You're just like, oh, why did I come to this meeting? What is recovery?
And that's spiritual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a spiritual
that's
tool
a spiritual
right there.
Tool right there.
Okay.
That coffee. Mm-hmm.
So define what you mean, spiritual tools, because I looked over at Darby as soon as you said that, and she was like...
Like my altar, or...
Yeah, well, anything that like that you're using to connect to your higher power.
Wait, what?
I'm kidding. Oh, I don't have sacrifice people's hopes and dreams.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, no, spiritual I don't. Tools.
Well, it was just Easter, so I figured, you know, kind of tie it in.
Oh,
the
yeah.
Yeah. So just like things that, you know, how do you connect with your higher power?
Well...
Do you connect with your
I mean Easter eggs, that seems very godlike. Mm-hmm. No, I don't know. Isn't that a weird thing, though? Because we're like, Jesus would have hid his own Easter eggs, I'm sure.
Oh, my gosh.
Anyway, it just seems goofy. It's a goofy mix of pagan and, like, it's a goofy how they did that. But don't get me wrong. I like eating chocolate Easter bunnies, so I'm not going to complain about it at all. Yeah. But I don't know much about that stuff. I really don't.
I think Ricky's make more personal.
I get it.
Want you to give an expose on it.
And then one Easter, and wear a stupid hat. Yeah.
We want you to talk about the theology of Jesus and prayer today.
Well, that is something like Christianity or like organized religion doesn't play a part in my spirituality at all, only because I guess I was raised Lutheran, so everybody sat in the back and nobody talked. And then, but when I got into recovery, I was so, I don't know why the word God just made me so enraged at some level. It was just like, it was like, it's everything I don't want to be. It's like, you say to be all these good things, and then I watch people do completely the opposite. Anyway, I had just been, like, turned off by it or whatever. And maybe it was a darker time. I was working at, you know, funeral home and all that stuff. It was darker days, but... I was able to connect with some, with the spirituality part, because in many times, how many times have you heard people come in, they're like, well, it's a God thing, I'm not going, you know, they say God or they pray, I'm not doing that. But I can promise you that if my dealer or the bartender was like, we're gonna have to get on our knees and pray before I can give you this next, you know, bump or whatever, I would have immediately done that. You know what I mean? So it's just like, what's the carrot? Or I have an illness that tells me I don't have it. So anything you say that is might be offend me, I'm going to find a reason to not go to a meeting. So that's just an excuse. Like, am I willing to be uncomfortable? Am I willing to ask enough questions to learn about this stuff or not? But I think over the years I found like my own spiritual kind of groove, and it's just different than the norm maybe or whatever. But I think it's vital to have some kind of spiritual connection, to believe that just to have hope in the future. I don't know what exactly that offers, but, and I've kind of found, I do all the woo-woo stuff, like those, that's my jam. I like the crystals and the sage, and I like all those things, you know, the nature and grounding, all of that stuff, like, resonates with my heart. Yeah. And you know, recovery has never said, well, you can't do that, that's weird, now you have to leave, you know. So I think that the bias we come in with are just created soul by our addiction, because it wants us out, you know. Right. But anyway, but that, so that's kind of what I've found over the years. And I remember when we had kids, my mom said, how are you going to teach morals and values if you don't take them to church? And I just thought, and I was like, I don't know how to answer that at the moment, but I know I can do it. I know I can create a good person without scaring them into being a good person. You know what I mean? Anyway, so, and I have amazing kids. I don't know how that happened. Like, they're really great, kind kids. And like we were saying before, how, like, there's only one rule in our house. Don't be a dick. Mm-hmm. And I've always told my kids, like, if I hear you, a well-placed swear word, fine. I don't care if you know what I mean? Like, it can be funny in the right context, in the right, know your audience, you know? And they've had some fails, but whatever. And so, and I'm like, I would rather you that, but if I hear you call somebody stupid or fat, then I will fuck up your day. Then, I mean, like, that is stuff that people are in therapy for later on in life, like me. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, but, you know, so it's just about, like, kindness and all of the things that recovery has taught me, to be giving and make amends and all of those things. Those are all huge spiritual things for me, anyway. But
which I think, when you talked about, like, crystals and sage, like, that's connecting to something greater than you.
Oh, too. For sure, yeah.
Not like that.
It is woo-woo. Yeah, it is. I have already cast a spell on you guys. No big deal.
Salem.
I think it's just a different approach. And I think a lot of times, I think I was having a conversation about this yesterday with people, with a guy who was like, man, it's just hard to understand.
Yeah.
So the people who, like follow the moon, or, like, Mercury's in retrograde, just all these different, like, things, most of the time, people just scoff at it or just ignore it because they don't understand it.
Yeah.
Or they don't want to understand it, so they're like, oh, that's weird, that's dumb, that's not for me.
Yeah.
Well, if you don't ever spend any time with someone who does do it and can, like, explain it, like, well, this is how this works or operates, and you're never really going to know.
Yeah.
And you're never going to know if it could potentially work for you. Because I think my relationship with, especially when I got in recovery, like my relationship with God like changed a couple of different times, but like when I got in recovery, it was like, how do I like, what are me and God cool now? Yeah. Like, because I just, I'm making all these amends and I'm just constantly getting reminded of all the things that I did
yeah.
when I was using, and like, oh my gosh, you know, so now like, what is God to me now?
Yeah.
And it was this whole weird journey of like, how do I reconnect with him now when I'm clean? Because mm-hmm. I was going to church and doing all the things when I was using. Yeah. So now that I'm going to church when I'm not, like, it's just a weird kind of construct of like, how do I have this relationship with him when I can actually like listen to him now, if that makes sense. And this is a whole, yeah. So it was just like such a weird place to the kind of be to like, how do I be a Christian and be clean when I was a Christian and not clean? And I understood how to do that.
Right.
But now it's like, just still trying to figure it out. And it keeps changing. And yeah. It's like, man, it felt a whole lot easier when I was just using it because it was, like, it was just clean, cut, and dry. I'm a jerk. Lord, please forgive me. I'm going to screw up again. Lord, please forgive me. Whereas now it's like, well, I haven't. It's hard to ask for forgiveness when I haven't really, when in my mind I haven't done anything wrong, when I am doing the right thing.
Well, just ask your wife.
Yeah, that's probably what it is.
Yeah, she'll tell you what you need talked.
You should go to God for this. Okay, all right, the list is long enough.
Yeah.
I'll come back.
But is that, like, in how you were raised, do you, once you make amends or whatever, is it, like, wiped clean? Do you get a do-over? How does that work?
No. It was like you're constantly like tearing before, like you're at, like, so when you were talking about the altar, like growing up it was like stay here and until you feel something. And so it's like, well, it could be a minute, it could be an hour, it doesn't matter, you're supposed to stay there and wait.
Like physically in a place?
Physically, like on your knees, like praying, doing all that. And so then it's like, what if I don't, like, at a certain point, you're kind of just, like, giving up. Like, all right, well, clearly God's not coming.
Yeah.
You know, like,
I've been still
here, Lord, whenever you're ready. You know?
I talked to him. He said, I don't have to feel bad.
Right. Like, God, all right, I feel good now. We're cool. But, like, you know, it was like, no, you still stay there. Or then they would, what would happen often is, like, we would go to the, you know, go to the altar, pray, ask for forgiveness for whatever my mom deemed that I screwed up and had to do. And then I'm like, all right, good. And I would get up. And then, like, my dad would, like, no, you stay here. So, but I'm good. Like, I felt it. Like, and then, like, how do you explain to someone else that you felt the Holy Spirit? Like, yep, God is already, like, all right. You know, I repented. We've moved on. But, nope. And he would, like, by the neck, like, nope, you stay here. Till I, you know, I'm going to be the one to tell you. And so it's like,
I'm what you're waiting for.
It's like, okay, all right. I mean, it was a lot of that growing up, for sure.
So that was how you grew up. Mm-hmm. What did you grow up with?
Nothing. I didn't go. We didn't go to church. We didn't do. I didn't get into at least the church aspect of you know, my spirituality until I was an adult, like probably close, almost to my 30s or whatever.
Yeah.
So, but prior to that, you know, the only people in my family that went to church was my grandma's. And they were vastly different. You know, my grandma was a Southern Baptist, and then my other grandma was Catholic, you know. So even their, you know, difference in, you know, like when you mentioned earlier about how are you going to raise them with morals and values, I mean, then I should not have any.
Right.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, there's a general... at least the Christians call it, they call it like a general revelation, right? Like you don't have to go to church or anything. Like you'll just know by looking out into the world that there's just no way that a man could have created all this.
Mm-hmm.
And by default creates a level of morals and values in the community, observation of the world. When you look at the stars, who created all this, you know, that you don't, if anything, church, like, can, I guess, help with that, you know, but it's pretty biased, you know, on their, you know, and so I guess my spiritual is, it's conflicting at times, you know. I think that there's a lot of faith in it, you know, that What if it's not true, right? I mean, like, one of the things I get really deep into my head. So it's just, you know, Moses was in all major religions. So was Abraham. Mm-hmm. And then we chose one of them, you know? Like, and it wasn't even like a choice as much as it was this, somebody coming and telling me that this is the right way.
Yeah.
You know? So based on environment, based on, you know, maybe even lack of context, whatever, I basically am going on faith that whatever I've been told is right, you know? And so with that, I think that there's, you know, it gets to a point where it's got to be a personal thing. And I've always, I think I really like the, you know, how Jesus himself was just like the greatest, like, criminal justice reformer. You know, because there was all these people that were really staunch about the law, and they were, like, creating rules on top of those laws. It's very American, right? Like, it's like, you know, we have a culture, and then we have laws. Right. And when you put the culture on top of those laws, it creates rules on top of them. And then people, like, hold you accountable to those rules if they were laws. Right? Like, you know, it's don't steal. And then you're not stealing, but then you know, you just happen to, like, think about it and tell someone about it, and they're just like, oh my God, you're a bad person. You know, it's like, whoa, wait till I tell you about the rest of the stuff that I think about, you know. And so,
moving on.
And that's a pretty, I think that's a pretty extreme example, but, like, you know, it could be any, you know, even back in the day with the Pharisees or whatever, it was called legalism. And they would, you know, one of the rules they had was they weren't allowed to leave their property on a day. They weren't allowed to go a certain amount of length from their property. So what they would do on a day that they could do that is they would take portions of their property and put it down the road, right? So that way they were always within the length of their property. Brilliant. Wherever they went, right? Yeah. And so that's a form of, like, legalism, where it's like, that's not really, like, that wasn't the intent of the law.
Right.
Right? It wasn't, the intent wasn't to try and find ways around it.
Yeah.
Or it wasn't, the intent wasn't to, I think sometimes the worst thing that happened to the Christian religion is it filled its rooms with, or the churches with people, right? Mm-hmm. And so then you know, you go to church or whatever, and then you have some, you know, guy there that really, really believes what he believes to be real, and he is impressing it upon you, and it just creates this kind of traumatic event of somebody grabbing someone by the back of the neck and putting them back down and telling them they're not ready, you know? Yeah. And so it's, I think that, you know, for me, I've had those kinds of events, you know, at church where you just feel like you're kind of worthless and you're not the same and you're not cut from the same cloth, and, you know, whether it's through body language or, you know, like a microform of aggression or whatever the case may be, or a friend that you went to church with that ends up, you know, not being your friend as much when you're at church, you know, whatever, like, it's the people. And so it has to be personal. There has to be, you know, and I think that the more, and it's a journey, just like recovery. And I think if I was, you know, happened to be a pastor of a church and somebody came to church and was just like, I think everything here is wrong, but I'm willing to continue to come, I'd be like, you can sit up front with me.
Yeah.
Right? And you got any questions through this whole process, I'm willing to answer them. If you want to go get coffee, you want to smoke cigarettes outside the church or whatever, or if you relapse and then show up here, like this is meant to be an ER for spiritual beings, right? It's not like that in a lot of places.
Yeah.
They've, you know, to the point where they have park benches outside their churches and they put, like, bumps on them so people don't sleep on them.
Well, it breaks my heart.
You know, like, sometimes I wonder, that's why I say he was, like, the greatest criminal justice reformer of all time, because he didn't, like, say don't listen to the law, and he didn't change it, but he fulfilled it, right? And so then, because no one could. They had so many laws and rules that nobody could have followed all of them.
Right.
And he comes in and he does it. And then he's just like, these rich people, it's going to be really hard for them to get into heaven. These people that are convicts and broken and prostitutes, it's going to be easier for them to get into heaven than it will be for someone who has everything.
Right?
Right? And he was like, he just totally evened it out. He's like, you get mad at them for, like, committing adultery, but all you do is think about it.
Right.
You know what I mean? You're no different. Mm-hmm. I was like, dang.
Yeah.
Dang.
I knew it.
Welcome to Jesus.
I know.
He just came in, and he's a contender. Like, he just showed up and was just like, no, everything here is wrong. And so I think that's my, you know, I really, so then it just comes down to, is it real?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the big piece. That's a piece for most, you know, new. I mean, even, I think that, you know, there's, if there's people out there that like 100% like have no doubts and no whatever, like personally, I don't think that's real. Like, I just don't.
Yeah.
Like, there's got to be thought, like, you know, then I wonder sometimes if there it's a form of like narcissism or psychotic, like, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, to have that 100% whatever, like, is it really faith if it's 100% trust?
Right.
Like, I think the whole cool thing about spirituality is that we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And it does take a level of faith.
Yeah.
And I got to take that leap, and it makes it even better. It's like when you get into a relationship where there's like, well, this is going to work 100%. Like, how do you know? I just know. Well, there's two people involved here. Like,
yeah.
You're basically saying that they're going to be perfect, right? And they're like, we're going to be perfect together. There's a lot of faith going into a relationship, you know? And so
they all start like that. I'm in love before they know we're dating.
Yeah, I'm going to get sober and it's just going to work, right? I'm going to be in recovery and I'm going to have no issues.
Yeah, it's 100%. It's gonna go.
This is what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah.
You know? And so, no, I just don't think it's real to not have doubts. And so what I usually tell people who are new to faith or new to recovery or just getting into a relationship or whatever, it's just like, listen, you just got to be graceful on yourself and the people around you. You know, like, you're going to have doubts, you're going to have miscommunication, you're going to feel like you're alone, you're going to feel fear, you're going to feel all these things. And the only thing that's going to get you through it is that you're going to, like, have faith that this is going to work out.
Yeah.
There's no other, you know, and hopefully you have some fun on the way.
Yeah. Don't paint yourself into a corner with, like, oh my God, 100% I'm in. So then when something goes south, you don't want to be like, okay, well, maybe it was 80%. You know what I mean? You don't want to, your ego won't let you say that. So
get into it and you're like, she's perfect. And I'm going to spend the rest of my life with her. How long have you known her? 3 days.
Yeah.
It's like, holy cow.
3 days online.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't even have to have met, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But I've had some really, you know, when I got sober, you know, I had gone the religious route. I had gone the atheist route. Like, I had tried the agnostic route where I just, you know, where I believed that there was something. I just didn't know what it was, right? And then I went even the Gnostic route where I was like, I had a special revelation of who it was, you know, and, you know, it was kind of, in the big book, it talks about the educational variety. And I think, you know, I've learned as I've gone, not necessarily what works and what doesn't work, but like, there's just a level of like, what's producing faith, what's producing trust, what's working in my recovery, right? And so, like, when I got sober, I was just like, I don't know who you are, and I really like Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you could just, like, I promise that if you help me stay sober, if you just make it a little bit easier for me to stay sober, I will help as many people as possible.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, I hear people say God doesn't make deals and this and that, but... And he probably didn't make that deal, but whatever happened that day, he made it easier, because it was never like that before.
Mm-hmm.
And I've not struggled in 10 years to obsessively think about using.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that was always the thing. It was like, when a normal person drives by a liquor store, it's just like, oh, beer's on sale.
Yeah.
And then just drive by. Like, I don't even know the beer's on sale. I don't give a shit that the beer's on sale. I just know that building has something that's going to mess me up and make me feel better. And I will obsess about it and drive around the block multiple times. That moment, that heat of the moment where there feels like there's butterflies just driving race cars on my stomach, and I can't think about it, that has not happened in almost 11 years.
Yeah.
And so that was how I knew that it was, like, removed, when I met, like...
So whether you understand, I think the idea that, like, I have to understand it to be a part of it, that's just asinine, because you're, A, that's not going to happen. And so if your sobriety is hinging on that, game off. But it, and even if spirituality is just, like, for me, it's a moment in the morning to collect my thoughts, focus on doing the next right thing instead of some scam, and then moving forward. Even if it just changes my perception of the day, if that's all it is, it's worth it, you know? But to think that I need to understand this before I can get on board with it is just crazy. And it is that faith that, like I know, now I know in my life, whereas before I'd be paralyzed with fear because I wouldn't know how things were going to end. And I'd be so worried and consumed with little life events that I just didn't know how it would end. And now I just have faith that it's going to end, you know, because I have a connection with something bigger than me, it will end for, it will end the way it's supposed to, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And either way, I'll be okay with it. And that's the connected part for me, is that I have learned how to be okay with whatever the ending is, because it's not, I know that even if I don't get what I want, that my higher power or whatever, even during the darkest times, it's prepared, this, the universe, whatever you want to call it, it's preparing me for what I want. It's just like, but there has to be dark times or I would never appreciate the light. It's like getting my kids ready to go to go sledding or some ungodly thing. It's like, listen, you're going to have to do all this shit that sucks. Like, you're going to have to go get long johns, find your boots, get, you know what I mean? All, you got to do all this stuff. We can't just say, I want to go and then go. You know, you're going to have to do all this stuff. So it's just like, as a parent, you prepare them for what they want, but they can't see the big picture of, like, oh, this adds up to this at the end. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I'm the same way with my own emotional sobriety, my emotional maturity, all of this stuff. Like, I don't know how this all adds up to make a decent person. I just have faith that if I just am humble enough to ask questions and take the next right action, life has proven to me that it will work out, you know? Mm-hmm. And even if I don't get what I want, that is probably absolutely what I need at that moment, you know? But it's scary, and that's when you start to panic and flail and drown, you know what I mean? Because you're just like, you start to create what you fear, which I heard that when I was first sober, and I thought, that is asinine. Create what you fear. Why would you do that? But inadvertently, you do. Like, if I'm, this is an extreme example, and just for the record, Matt has never been unfaithful, but if I am afraid that my significant other is going to leave, then that fear consumes me. And now I start saying, like, where were you? What are you doing? Can I check your phone? You know, I start obsessing about it until either the relationship is just broken because the trust is gone, or just like, screw it. If I'm in trouble for this already, I may as well go find Double D Debbie, you know what I mean, or whatever. Because that would be her name, and I would burn all of Matt's shit. But it wouldn't, I'm sure he didn't cheat on me. It wasn't personal. So, but I'd still burn all his shit.
Oh, how Matt always gets brought up on our podcast as an example of something he's never done.
I know. Just for the record. For the record.
We should start with that before Double D Debbie came in the conversation.
Yeah. I don't even know a Double D Debbie.
Yeah.
So. But if I did, I'd burn her shit too. No, I'm kidding.
Well, we want to just thank again our sponsors, F5 Project, The Ridge Treatment and Reentry Center, GoAwayBear.com, Shirts from Fargo, Heat Transfer Warehouse for just supporting us. This is awesome that we're able to have people who see the vision and want us to continue to do the things that we're doing. And of course, for everybody who has liked and subscribed so far, thank you. For everyone who is like contemplating it, their mouse is like hovering over it, please hit that like and subscribe. Let us know. We have amazing guests that are coming, just all sorts of really, really good stuff. And so we've been talking about just spiritual tools, you know, just obviously with Easter kind of coming around. I think one of the things that, like, a tool that I like didn't even know was happening until, like, I, like, kept coming. So we were talking about, like, when they would always close meetings and say, please keep coming back, it works. Mm-hmm. And it was just, I was like, oh, I was like, God, okay, here we go. It's just like another, like.
Thank you, Sensei.
Yeah. Just another thing. Because it's like, in church, you know, church, we have those, like, phrases and things and pray until
like
something
what?
Happens.
You ever heard that? Church?
Yeah, church.
Pray until what?
Pray until something happens.
I didn't grow up going to church, so I don't know any of the slogans.
Yeah, it's like push, pray until something happens. Oh. Yeah. So I was like, oh, okay, cool.
Just keep pushing.
Yeah. Pray until something happens. It was like one of the really popular ones. So then they were like,
They're so much nicer at church. Ours was like, keep it simple, stupid. What does that even mean? KISS. I was like, that is the dumbest acronym I've ever heard.
That's because you're dumb.
You
just
got
keep
two
coming.
Eyes. You got 2 eyes. You got 2 ears and 1 mouth. Shut up. It's like, recovery meetings suck, man. You guys are so mean. You go to church and they're just like, keep praying until something happens.
No.
What if nothing happens? Just keep praying. Like Dory from Finding Nemo. Yeah. Like, just keep swimming.
Yeah. Something will happen.
Well, that's what it was like. Like, it was very much the same. So I was like, oh, okay, like, eye roll. Just like, all right, here's another thing. But when I did keep coming back and did, like, had the faith that I'm like, okay, this is, you know, something I got to do now. Because we were, you know, especially talking about, like, having this faith of, like, I have no idea if I'm going to stay clean today.
Yeah.
But they keep telling me to keep coming back. So I just kept coming, having no real, like, I had the desire, like, obviously I had the desire to, like, get clean, but I had no idea if this is actually going to work.
Right.
People kept saying that if I keep coming, it's going to work. I just kept showing up. And then eventually, like, my faith kind of, like, matched up to it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just such a different perspective. Like, keep coming, like, seeing, and every time I would go to church, I wouldn't always feel like that. I wouldn't always have that same kind of, like, connection, that same kind of, just, like, we're happy to see you, and just, like, a lot of these different things. When I would go into the rooms, and it didn't matter the room. Like, it could be I was at GA or NA or AA, or I was just going to everything I possibly could, mm-hmm. because when I was, like, triggered, I was like, I need to find the first thing, and they said meetings work. So I was like, oh, my God, I need to go to a meeting. And so every time I would go to those rooms at any different place, sometimes it was a clubhouse, sometimes it was, like, I would go to, like, Olivet or Frontopin, and all these different churches and things, and, you know, it was, like, the spaces. The message was always the same, but, like, it just felt the same, too.
Yeah.
The message would always, quote-unquote, be the same every time I would go into different churches, but it wouldn't always, like, feel that same way. Like, the feeling of what faith should look like was people who were coming in here, and we were just wailing and just telling our stories, and it was just, like, all these different things. It was, like, there was truly, truly no judgment. And it was awesome. I was like, oh, this is what faith looks like. It was crazy seeing faith activated in a meeting or with my sponsor, just on other places. But it's like, well, we would have a lot of these push and pray until something happens. Like, we had a lot of these phrases, but I would never see it in action.
Yeah.
I would never really, like,
see anything. That's a great point. That's a great point.
But then I would see it there. Yeah. And then I was, oh, okay, cool. So even if my faith, even if I was like, you know, you were talking about the crystals, like, but I'm like, well, if I'm seeing it work, and I'm like, oh, I mean, I may not necessarily think what you're doing is right, but it's working, so I need to continue to do that. I wouldn't always be able to see that in church. And it was such a different,
interesting,
weird concept, because I grew up in church. I, you know, that's, like, that was the, you know, that's what you did.
It is, that, I mean, that's really a great point, because I think when I got to the meetings, it was like people were taking the action. They'd say, love your neighbor, all those things. But then in reality, if somebody shows up at your door and needs some shit, don't answer. You know what I mean? Because they're scary. Yeah. But when I got to recovery, it felt so much more inclusive. Like, oh, you need something? I will actually help with that.
Yeah.
And then I'm living my faith.
Mm-hmm.
And that I can get behind.
Yep.
But the idea of, like, yeah, it's good to help people, but somebody else should. Isn't there a place you can go to get this help or something? You know what I mean? Yeah. It was like I can get behind the actions. And yep. I think the actions is the only thing that created faith in my life. Because I couldn't have thought my way into this no matter how hard I tried, because I overthink it. You know what I mean? I just mess it all up. But to take the action, to actually live altruistically and help with expecting nothing in return other than I get another day sober, is has created this life of faith that's like something I can lean on, you know, where I just didn't think that would ever be possible in my life, because it was such a, somebody say God and I just get the shivers, you know. It's just so bizarre. But if you think about how hung up we get on these little things when we go to meetings, when we first go to meetings, like, well, I only go to this meeting or this meeting, or somebody said they didn't like me or blah, blah, blah. Like, this is life or death. This is life or death. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So figure yourself out and put all the stuff that you have problems with on the back burner for now. You'll figure it out later. Just get there, for Christ's sake. Get to know some people. Have a little bit of an open mind and be willing to be uncomfortable, or you're not going to get better, you know? And all of that stuff, forget about it. You know what I mean? Because just put it all into context. If my dealer wanted me to pray at the end, you know what I mean, then I would definitely do that. But would you do it for your drug or whatever, you know? Anyway, but yeah, I love that.
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, I think that's, obviously that's why I've stayed clean. You know, being able to have that connection, to have having real connection, but being able to see the things in action. Because it was great, like in church, we had food program. Like, you know, we would do all the different things. We'd volunteer and all this. We're, you know, connecting people with resources. But sometimes, like, well, why can't we just do it? Why can't we just give them the food or give them the money or give whatever the thing is? If that person's asking for, why can't we just do it? Well, no, we don't.
What if they take that money and buy alcohol?
Yeah, like, just all these things.
Well, none of my business wants their money.
But like, I've never had to question.
Maybe they won't die then.
You know, just being able to see it activated, specifically with faith. It's like seeing faith in action all the time was wonderful. And it was like really, really cool being able to be in this place of all these other different people who are sharing these different things and just going through all these different things. And it's like, man, we're all doing the same thing. We're all struggling.
Yeah.
No one person, you know, because I grew up in church, like you have the pastor or your bishop, and you kind of have your deacons, and you know, it was like this hierarchy where it's like, well, literally rich or poor, sober or not, you know, some meetings were like, man, I don't know. But like everyone was treated fairly. Everyone was treated equally. Like this is... This felt like if we were to take communion in a meeting, which would be so weird if we ever had someone who was like, let's take communion. But it was, it just felt
shots!
Like, yeah, you know, but it was like, we're all equal. This is what it should be like. I think this is what God intended, is like when we go to a meeting, where we just go to a place and everybody's like on the same plank. Because everybody's here for the same reason. We're just trying to get better.
Yeah.
I'd make the argument that not one person ever thinks everyone's equal. There's always someone you think you're better than.
Yeah.
Everyone.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, you know, usually say, I mean, when the meeting's over, that's when it comes out. But not during the meeting.
No.
Like, you know.
I think the transparency is the trick. The transparency of, like, when leaders, when people you look up to are willing to say, like, oh, I burned that shit down. That is like, oh, my gosh, now I want to be a part of this. Because I don't feel so...
Really get up there and, like, I'm still terrible. A wreck.
Yeah.
I'm still, you know, like, I'm just trying one day at a time. I'm like, that guy's 20 years sober. He's still struggling.
This is awful.
He thought it was going to come off. It was like, we're all in this together. Yeah. We're, you know, I'm struggling just as much as I want. You know, the guy's like, I don't want to struggle for 20 years.
It's a different struggle.
It's a different struggle.
Yeah. I can pay my mortgage. Yeah. I'm just struggling with different things now. Yeah. Like, whatever it is, parenting or whatever. Mm-hmm. High class problems.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Instead of, what am I going to eat?
I don't know where I'm going to stay. I heard a guy the other day who was like, I got to quit my job. I'm like, why? He's like, I need to go find a place to live. I was like, oh, such a vicious cycle. Because you need the job to pay
for
the place.
It's terrible.
It's like, but you need to be able to find the place so you can't go to work.
Yep.
Right. You know, that first, man, that first year, it's a, man, it's life or death for a lot of guys.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've seen, there's more people that relapse in that first
year,
90 days, you know, than there. It doesn't mean that people at 20 years, 30 years don't relapse. There's actually a very high number that do.
Yeah.
But not as much as, you know, the constant, you know, relapsing of that first, you know, couple weeks to year or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, when you're, like, relapsing around that time, like, to me, it makes sense.
Yeah.
There's not a lot to lose.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, well, I guess I could die.
Right.
But outside of that, I don't see my kids. I don't have a place to live. I don't have a car. I don't have. So, like, when you relapse, it's like, man, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, you just want to feel better,
right.
You know. At 20 years, when you've built a life, that's suicide.
Yeah. Mm.
Like, there's intent behind it. So it is scary to like, think of someone who relapses that's been 20, 30 years sober, because it's borderline suicide.
Right.
You know, because it doesn't get better. Like, even 20 years later, it's still, the outcome's going to be the same.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have all this stuff that you're going to completely destroy.
Right.
And as you're destroying it, it's not like you're getting better self-esteem.
Right.
You know, I've yet to see anyone who came in to recovery who got a bunch of time, relapsed, somehow lived, and come back, actually stay sober.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
I know it's out there.
Yeah, yeah.
I personally, and I might even know of a couple guys, I just don't know that I know,
right?
Because we probably go to different places or whatever the case may be. We're not connected as we used to be. But I have, there is way more, and the crazy thing is those guys end up reaching out to me, you know, because of all the slipping and relapsing I did early on. Now looking back, I'm grateful that all the relapsing that I did was early in my first, like, trying to get my first year.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of those guys got sober their first try.
Yeah.
And then they stayed sober for, like, 20 years. And then they relapse. And now they're doing all their relapsing now, if they make it through it.
Right.
And then they try to come back, and it's just not. There's something. I think what it is that it's a loss of place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In the group,
right?
There was a hierarchy in recovery, just like everyone else. You got, you guys are 20 years, you got 30 years, you got 10, you got 5, whatever. Mm-hmm. And you got some key, you know, some key players that were real sober for a while, and then they sponsor a lot of guys, and they, you know, whatever. And then they relapse, and then they come back, and it's like they never really lost their place, but to them they did.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
The way that people look at them, it's just like, it's kind of like, you know how people treat you when you lose a friend, or your mom dies or something like that. You can see they're just like a little more careful around you. They're a little more sensitive, you know, like, we don't want to stir the boat, you know, rock the boat. And a lot of times these guys just want to be treated the same.
Right.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They want to get their balls busted and made fun of, know, but at the same time, some of them don't. Because this is like walking on eggshells, you know. And the only experience I have with that is that I had, you know, the last, you know, run that I went on, I had been sober for like 6 or 7 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then I relapsed, and then I went and broke into a bunch of places that were like owned by people in recovery. And then I went on the run, and then I came back. And it was like I was walking on eggshells in that meeting, because there was people at that meeting that I had robbed, you know. And I was just like, you know, at least with the guys who had a lot of time and then come back, they didn't do shit to anybody. They just went out and got drunk and came back. It was like, you know, I guess I'm not perfect. And then, you know, I came back. I was like, hey, everybody, I robbed half of you, you know.
Sorry.
Every time I got up to the podium to speak, I was like, I feel like I'm just doing like a large amends to the group. I did more damage to my group, you know, through, you know, getting drunk and relapsing and stealing and lying and, you know, whatever, than I ever did to my, like, you know, to people prior to that. I mean, I did some crazy shit, don't get me wrong. But it was different because I didn't have to go back and hang out with them.
Yeah, I know.
You know what I mean? I had to go back, and I was like, well, I guess I'll go to this meeting. And half the people here I owe amends to. So I get, like, in the sense of, like, being uncomfortable there. But the only way through that, right, is to just be, like, super transparent about it. Just be like, listen, I'm fucking uncomfortable being in this meeting. I think this is a stupid idea.
Yeah.
I think I should go to a different meeting. And luckily I had people in my life who were like, well, you shouldn't have done something dumb. It wouldn't be a dumb idea if you didn't do dumb shit. And he's like, and honestly, no one here, they all get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah. And don't make places unapproachable or you're just... But when I left, when I left AA for a while, I didn't drink, but I was gone for a few years. And this illness is insidious. And it is just like creeps up on you. And it told me, I mean, it just like, I was convinced I just had depression, had nothing to do with this because I'd done the AA thing, whatever. But it is humbling to come back as having been a big deal, you know what I mean, or whatever. It's good. It was good for me, and I'm so grateful for it. But I was like, I went back to a meeting I made, and I was new again. And these girls would be like, hi, welcome. I'm so-and-so. And I'm like, bitch, I made this meeting. You know what I mean? But I just shut up, and I'm like, this is on me. I got to just be humble. And you know what I mean? Like, I'm willing to learn because that's how miserable I am. Yeah. But I did whatever, 18 years sober, and I wanted to die because it was just like, and I was convinced it had to be something else because I'd done all this,
right?
You know? But I lost connection with it. I lost connection with the people, which is my spirituality. You know what I mean? So it just like, because I was busy and I was a big deal and I had a career and little kids and whatever. Yeah. And I forgot to put my recovery first. And it has to come before my kids. It has to come before my marriage. It just has to come first. Or the rest of it just slowly crumbles, you know? Because I wreck it with my best ideas.
I have the opposite kind of issue or whatever, because I go to meetings and there are always people there that know who I am, not from AA.
Yeah.
So it's just like, I'll be sitting talking to some guys that I really enjoy, you know, being around in AA or whatever. Well, in 12-step meetings.
Yeah.
And some guys come out like, are you? Oh, it's Adam from F5 Project. You're a big fucking deal, man. It's just like, that's very embarrassing.
Yeah.
I just, you know, like then it kind of like infiltrated the meetings, you know, so it's like, you know, it's not even really that fun because like I'll go, you know, for my, like speaker meetings are nice. Because then no one can talk to me. Like, I'll just sit there. But a lot of times, even when I go to those meetings, then they ask me to speak. It has nothing to do with what I've done, like, in, like, recovery as much as what I've done out in the professional arena. And it's just like, and so then I go to, like, I'm like, I'm going to try a small little clubhouse meeting. And then I go to that meeting. There's, like, four guys there looking for housing. I'm like, fuck, man. Can't go anywhere.
Yeah, that's
my
a pretty
star
good
is
problem.
Too big.
Yeah, it's all right. It's just a little embarrassing or whatever. Because you're a wrong guy, your friends or whatever, and it's just like, you know, they've known you since you were just like just a piece of crap.
And they love you enough to say, like, oh, he is a big deal. Let's just get down to that topic.
Yeah, I got one friend who's just like, you might be a big deal, but you're still a piece of shit.
I know what you've done.
Yeah, I know.
He was the guy that when I got sober, his couch was the first one that I slept on. So he, you know, the cool thing about him is he's never taken credit for anything. You know, because I'll have people kind of scattered around their way when they'll tell this. They'll be like, yeah, I was there and I helped Adam do this, or I helped Adam do this. And, like, I don't even think he's ever mentioned me ever in anything that he's ever done. And, I mention him, you know. And then he'll come up, he's like, yep, you're still a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Thanks, Gray. Thanks.
The kid that never ages, you know.
He still looks like he's
18. It's crazy. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah, so do you think, like, obviously for those who are still, you know, still trying to find the spirituality, or maybe they're like, you know, fuck it, I don't want a higher power, I don't want to like, do any of that. Is it possible to not have any sort of believe in anything bigger than yourself and still be in recovery?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
It'd be, I mean, if it wasn't possible, it'd be, I mean, it, your idea of God wouldn't change either. So, like, mm-hmm. if you came in with whatever belief you had, let's mm-hmm. say it was a God, most people I know that stay sober, their views and worldviews change mm-hmm. over time. And I'm not saying that, you know, people who come in as atheists will change as, you know, like maybe they'll stick onto that or whatever, but them as humans will change
yeah.
over time. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think it, I think that if you're like seeking out recovery, it doesn't really matter what you believe, mm-hmm. right? It might be kind of weird going through the steps when it talks about God or whatever,
right.
but I don't think, I mean, and if people are in that meeting or in that group that make a big deal about that with you, then just go to a different meeting.
Yeah,
you know, you'll eventually find a meeting where it's just like, you know, it's filled with agnostics, Muslims, mm-hmm. Christians, you know, atheists, agnostics, you know, Jehovah's Witnesses, Mormons. Like mm-hmm. it's just,
yeah.
it's everybody. Like the whole right. point of it is to be like a primer,
right,
to your life, not mm-hmm. to be your life,
right.
You know,
yeah.
We only go, like, I go to a few meetings, like a few hours a week. I'm in recovery, and the rest of that time I'm with at work and with my mm-hmm. family. Mm-hmm. It's meant to be practiced in your life,
right,
right. And it even says in the book that it's only meant to be in our spare time,
mm-hmm.
not like to build a whole
yeah.
empire yeah. of recovery
yeah.
and save everyone,
yeah.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was never meant to be that way. It was meant to be an enhancement
right.
to get you back into your life and be a better Christian, be a mm-hmm. better doctor, be a better, you know, whatever it is that you are, mm-hmm. that you identify as.
But it was never religious.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think sometimes, like, when the books were written, they just didn't have the words to say, this has nothing to do with religion. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Just like, and if that's causing you a lot of stress in newly recovery, mm-hmm. put it on the back burner. Get to know people. Mm-hmm. Just get to know people.
Yeah.
And the rest will be clear later on. Mm-hmm. You just don't have to figure it out. Because I've never heard anybody say, well, I went to the bar, and then I remembered this worksheet I did on relapse prevention, and I decided, I'm going home. Never, ever, ever. But I have heard a lot of people say, and then I thought about this person I met, and I didn't want to let them down. You know what I mean? So it's mm. all about connections. It's not about digging deeper into your psyche, any of that stuff. That'll all do all that later. You just got to get connected to other people.
Yeah.
And start there, mm-hmm. you know, because, and believe me, I handed out a lot of relapse prevention packets that I knew were busy work, but they, you know, they make some things clearer for you, but they are not going to save you at the end of the day, that's for sure. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
Proximity of a community.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the most important
yeah.
aspect. I told a guy last night at my relapse prevention that I was like, just treat this as like your constant. Come back here mm-hmm. once a week.
Yep.
Tell us what you did.
Mm-hmm.
What did you try different?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, you can go out there, try going to AA, try going to NA the following week. Come back here and tell me it sucked.
Mm-hmm.
Just keep coming back here until we can find what it is that's going to work for you.
Right.
And don't drink. And even if you do, come back.
Yeah, mm-hmm. for real.
You know, proximity and you know, consistency.
Mm-hmm.
Those are probably, you know, surrounding myself with a bunch of recovery strangers and then making it consistent.
Yeah.
That's probably the two things that I think set me aside from what I was constantly relapsing before. But even when I was doing that, I still kept coming.
Right.
You know, no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, you know what? At one time I was like, I'm going to prove to them I can keep drinking and living a normal life. And I go get drunk and I come back and they're like, oh, that worked out for you. And they're like, thanks, Bob.
Yeah.
How
normal was your life last week?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And really, like, when I first got sober, it was not like, oh, this is going to connect me to a spiritual blah, blah, blah that kept me coming back. It was like, oh my gosh, there are like 10 single guys here. I'm coming back. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So whatever the reason is to go back. I don't mm-hmm. care. It doesn't have to be healthy at all.
I originally just went back because the guys were like wanted to hang out.
Yeah.
Like, it was just weird having friends.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, because I came from a small town. I didn't go to church. I wasn't part of any you know, like, I kicked out of school. Like, by the time I got to recovery, it was just like, man, these guys are nuts. Mm-hmm. And they're sober, and they're young, and they're just like me. Like, we think the same.
Yeah.
I didn't think, I thought I was, like, broke.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Broken. Like, because I'd go to church, and people would be, like, you know, worshiping with their hands up in the air. Yeah. I'm just man, they got to be ripped out of their minds. It's just like, there's no way. You know, and then we like have our little meetings and stuff and Bible studies. And I'm like, these, I am not like these people.
Yeah.
Right.
They are so grateful and like, you know,
yeah.
and nice and be like, Adam, I saw that you were on the Valley News Most Wanted. I was like, yeah, yeah, I lie to my wife sometimes. We are not the same. I lie to everyone. I steal cars and shit and wake up and detox with mugshots, you know. So when I showed up to AA and I heard their stories, I was like, man, we, mm-hmm. that guy's nuts, that guy's nuts, I am nuts, we are nuts together. Like,
and they got their life back.
Yeah, they got their shit together. Yeah. That was probably the most impressive part. I was like, that guy actually gets to talk to his kids.
Yeah, I know, amazing. You know,
he's got a job at a place that if they knew, like, there's no way he would have that job.
Yeah. Right.
So I just saw little miracles, and I was just like, that's really probably what kept me coming back, is that I might one day be able to live similar lives to these guys.
Yep.
And it worked.
Yeah, now look at you. You're a little miracle.
No, I'm a big deal and I can't go to
the
Oh, that's so egotistical.
Yeah, it does change it a little bit, but yeah, still the idea is the same, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't want to get to where you're at a place where like, well, I can't go. There's other professionals I've worked with that are like, well, I can't go because what if a client's there? And I'm like, oh, well, then they'd see that you actually practice what you preach. So, you know.
Yeah. It gets weird when they start, like, wanting to, like, be friends and hang out. And I really, really want to. Like, I want to sponsor them or whatever. Mm-hmm. I just can't because it's just, there's too much conflict. But I had a guy last night ask me at a real restaurant. He was like, will you sponsor me? I was like, man, I wish.
Yeah.
I wish I could.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm like a bad example to recovery when it, you know, I was like, but I know plenty of guys.
Yeah, I can hook you up.
You know, so.
And that's the biggest part, because it would be a ethical thing, but anyway.
But it is what it is. I'm glad to see him, though. I'll talk to him.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, if they're at coffee, I'll even sit down and have coffee with them after the meeting and stuff. I just won't have that intimate kind of sponsorship, you know, relationship. But there's so many people in AA, like, or in, God, I keep saying, in recovery that are, like, very good at that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And even if the label's not there, like, the label of sponsor or whatever, talk to everybody. Everybody wants to hear themselves give advice, so they will give it freely, you know what I mean? But, yeah, just connect.
Yeah. Well, we have a couple more minutes left. Is there anything else you guys want to share? Anything new or things we can give to the world?
Give to the world?
Because
that's who's watching this.
Yeah.
Millions and millions of people.
You're welcome.
You see the analytics. You know that's not right.
It reaches millions.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't think millions are actually watching. I think but it shows up on their screen. You're like, oh, there's Adam.
This is a question I've gotten often from people that like listening to us. Where do they find the recordings we've done? Where do they find those?
Oh, yeah. Well, we're on all the major platforms, so Apple, Spotify.
And they just put in FI Project Podcast.
FI Recovery Podcast.
FI Project.
Yeah, if they search or FI Project.
Yeah, they can go to the website, fiprojectorg/podcast, and they'll find it there.
Okay, cool.
So go there.
Yeah. I'll have to send
I'm guessing you're already there, though, if you're watching this right now. But
I just, you'll be redundant by the time you see this part.
You keep telling me to go to the podcast, but I'm watching the podcast.
I'm watching the podcast. It's like some Inception.
No, we appreciate our followers, our subscribers, our sponsors, everybody. Like, it's a blessing to be able to meet here once a week. And this is kind of... This is one of my meetings.
Yeah, for real.
You know, so I appreciate you guys, and I'm proud of all the staff at F5 and the Ridge, and doing just an amazing job helping as many people as possible that come through the door showing up at trap houses to, I don't even know half the places that we go. I hear stories all the time. It's like, where'd you meet this guy? I went to his house. I was like, oh my God. yeah. Love you, Amber.
Side note. Yeah. Side note.
Next time, take someone yeah. with you. Please, please. Yeah. That's it. I'm just
yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. So tune in. We'll be back with more. Scott will be back. He's out traveling. So I want to, of course, shout out to Hadi. We're always thankful to have another host and another great things. We have a special guest that will be joining us on our next show. So definitely look forward to that. We're just really grateful. And also, this is just a plug. If you're interested and want to come onto the show, have a great story you want to share, just follow us on socials, hit us in our DMs, email Adam or I. However you want to get a hold of us, please let us know. We would definitely love to be able to have you and be able to help, you know, share just more stories of people who are doing awesome things. So thank you again, F5 Project, The Ridge Treatment and Reentry Center, GoAwayBear.com, Heat Transfer Warehouse, Shirts from Fargo. Thank you for your sponsorships. And each one of you, have a great day in recovery.